Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show brings on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now remember, if you can't listen live, all of our shows, including this one, can be found at answers.network. And I'd really appreciate it if you'd all do me a wonderful favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media groups and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. And I guarantee you, if you know anybody that either has tweens or as younger children that will be tweens soon, this is one you definitely want to be listening to. So our question for today is also the title of our guest's new book. And that is, who are you? And what have you done with my kid? Connect with your tween while they are still listening. Ah, the tween years. That uncertain time in a child's development that has many parents thinking they need to double down on academic focus and watch their children more carefully as they're exposed to more of the world through society and their peers. Now, what is a parent to do, though, when they're feeling so much pressure to watch their kids, yet they also want them to gain the confidence they need to move through the world successfully into their teens and beyond? Well, enter our guest, Dr. Amanda Craig, a family therapist who has seen and experienced much of this in her practice and has legitimately written the book on it. Now, in her 20-plus years as a family therapist, Dr. Craig has worked in a variety of settings, including research departments, juvenile correction facilities, high schools, Fortune 500 companies, substance abuse programs, and college classrooms. Now, a seasoned public speaker and published author of research papers, her awards and recognitions include Certificate of Appreciation from the New York State Division of Parole, a Certificate of Recognition from the Office of the Governor of Juvenile Justice, and the 2022 YWCA Darien Norwalk Women of Distinction Award. So, and last but certainly not least, she is a wife, a mother of two, and a woman of faith. Amanda, welcome to Answers Network.
Hi, Alan. Thank you for having me today.
Well, it is my pleasure. One of the things that I have some experience in is through my adolescent services company, or the one that I founded, we worked a lot with tweens and with teens. And one of the things that we had to teach our own employees was the huge difference that when you're dealing with one versus dealing with the other, that there's so many things that the tween is going through and may not understand it the same way as a teen, that we actually had separate training so that they could understand both. So share with us a little bit about, I guess, you know, what inspired you to write this book and why you felt the focus should be on tweens themselves.
I love that you did that separate training, because there is such a distinction and we often put them all into the category of teen. So I really appreciate that. You know, the book was a passion project. I've been working with families for 20 years in all different communities and walks of life. And I just really wanted to give parents something that would help them in the journey, because when you see your kid go off to college, you turn back and realize those years of parenting have just changed, and you either have a lot of regret in that moment or you have a lot of relief and pride. And I just want every parent to look back and say, I'm so proud of the tools and the packaging I gave my kid to take in the world with them.
You know, I was just telling a story this weekend, and I don't even remember how I got on the subject, but it was with a group of people, and we were talking about having old videotapes of our children and transferring them over onto, you know, DVD or streaming it and so on. And somehow I started talking about a videotape that I had of my son when he was about 4 years old. And he was asking me question after question after question. He just kept firing them at him. And I was firing back answers so quick. We were in the backyard. And then he stopped for a moment. And he went, "Wow, Dad, you know everything, don't you?" And my answer was, "As far as you know." And then I, at the time, I looked to my wife and said, "Go get the video camera." She went and got the video camera. And then I got the conversation with him again. And I said, "Now, what did you say a little bit ago?" And he said, "Dad, you know everything, don't you?" I said, "Okay, great. Thank you. I really appreciate that." And then when I spoke to my wife later, she says, "Why did you do that?" And I said, "Well, because when he becomes a tween or a teen and I know absolutely nothing, I'm going to play the video for him and remind him when I knew everything."
Right. I love it.
So it's as if when they become a tween, this giant needle comes out of the sky. And as parents, it sucks half our brain out because we get really dumb.
Oh, my gosh. And they grow wise beyond our years.
Exactly. So now, one of the things that I liked as I was not only reading your book, but looking into some of your speeches, that you've written and spoken that there's a neurological explosion taking place right before us as tweens experience their four significant changes that shake them and sometimes us as parents to the core. Can you share these four changes and the science behind, what is the science behind this explosion?
Oh my gosh. So, and this is kind of why I honed into the tweens for this book. As I was doing my research, it became so clear that tweens, this 9 to 12 year old period, is where our brain starts to change. In fact, it goes through this huge neurosprouting and all these new pathways start to develop by the second. And I mean, they are going through thousands and millions of changes and growth. And they haven't gone through this much growth and development in their brain since they were very, very young. Mm-hmm. And so how this comes out in their behavior is, number one, their feelings are deeper and more complex. Number two, they are so aware socially of their peer group and what other people are doing. And because they're so still unsure, they think everybody is looking at them and knowing everything going on in their brain, which we don't. But that's where they get a little insecure and unsure.
Yep.
And then the fourth piece is, and this is really key for this 9 to 12, they just don't have any wisdom or experience yet to make sense of all of these new complicated nuances. So whereas later a 15-year-old will have had peer conflict, will have been bullied on the bus, will have been in the school lunchroom for years, tweens are really just leaving that second, third, and fourth grade parallel play into this brand new space.
So how as parents can we help them? In other words, how can we help them kind of work through these emotions that are brand new, that they don't recognize, without them feeling like we are trying to control them or do things that then make them want to rebel?
Oh, for sure. So, you know, one of the key to this stage, and whenever someone says, "What should I do about my tween?" I said, start with the tween, right? Because the tween, we still have a seat at the table. They're still interested in spending time with us. They're open to our feedback. They're open, because they're so unsure. You remember when our kids are toddlers and, you know, we walk into the room and they're hanging onto our leg, but by the time we send them to kindergarten, they wave with a big smile and off they go.
Yep.
We're kind of in that same space again. We're tweens. They're still kind of hanging onto our leg to make sure, like, this makes sense. This is safe. So in my book, I talk about the four pillars of emotional connection. And that's the key to building a foundation that'll keep us connected in the teen years.
And let's talk about what society is has done to shift or shape things differently now, because, you know, I can look at it. I've got a few semesters on you, so I can look back and go, okay, we didn't have, you know, the influence from the internet. We didn't have all of this. The influence we had was pretty much what we saw on about four channels on television, the radio, or our neighborhood that was within the distance that we could ride our bike to.
Right. Yep. Yes. And so they have social media, and I really break that down into influencers, mm-hmm. right? Because influencers and that lifestyle expose them to instant gratification, big living, right? Risk taking. TikTok, 30-second videos, one after another, which stimulates the brain and kind of that addictive quality.
Yeah.
We have YouTube, which are longer videos, and there's no, you know, back in the day, if it was PG-13, if it was an R movie, we couldn't get in. Whereas right. now they can be exposed to R, and nobody can screen all of that. Even parents, it's really hard to screen every minute that they're on social media. And then when you get into like the video games, it's so sophisticated. It looks real. It sounds real. I mean, there's such a high quality to that, that it becomes very lifelike. And then you have the online communicating with people all over the world that you've never met. And you really don't know who you're communicating with. It might, right. they might claim to be a 10-year-old boy, but they could be any number of things. And we just don't know. And again, they don't have the wisdom to really tease out, is this a 10-year-old boy?
Yeah, and again, in my main profession as an international detective, those are the things that are so scary, is understanding that. But at the same time, and I've spoken on this to various groups, and I try to explain to the parents, and I go, I'm not up here saying that the internet is bad, and I'm not saying your kids shouldn't be allowed to use the computer. I am saying that you need to supervise it more. And on the one hand, there's incredible and vast amounts of knowledge that they can get from this. This is great. And like you said, about talking to somebody from another part of the world, that's great. I mean, in my day, it was an exchange student. You learned about the other part of the world, either from a textbook, or if an exchange student was in your school, you thought that was the coolest thing and you wanted to learn from them what it was like in their country. So yes, if they can talk to these people, but like you said, know that they're talking to them and not somebody that is more of a predator or is not looking out for their best interests.
I love that. And I do talk to parents a lot about it. It's not about the internet or screens. I always say screens being the enemy, because it's here to stay. Mm-hmm. So how do we sit and do it together?
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes my son will watch TikTok and I'm sitting next to him scrolling Facebook, and we share things. Sometimes he text messages me TikToks. I want to be involved in what he's doing in that world. And then we have limits of how much time and effort. And then the other thing is, sometimes I want my kids off the screens so we can hang in other ways as a family.
And that's one of the things you talk about in the book, which I love. And so share, you know, some of the ways in which parents can strengthen those family dynamics so that you already have that kind of relationship to where they are going to listen more when you say, okay, we're now not going to do this, we're going to now go do that. And if you've set that pattern ahead of time, so share just, I mean, some of the things, and I love some of the things you touch about in the book, where the parents can strengthen their dynamics to a point in which they aren't being questioned or kind of had eye rolls or something every time they want to do something.
Well, you might still get the eye rolls.
You might still get them.
What you're talking about in the book is the third pillar, which is, I am here for you.
Yes.
And this is that idea of, together, how do we create family time? And I distinguish, it's not about, I'm going to entertain you. It's about, how do we bond as a family? And so one piece of this is play and fun. we are losing this concept of play and fun after five. But if we can like laugh and have inside jokes and find things we just pure joy, that is going to bond us. It's going to make memories. And in the same spirit of memories, what are our rituals? What is unique to us as a family, us as a mother-daughter, us as a daddy-daughter? How do we engage in tradition so that there's some kind of inside story that is unique and valuable to us as a family?
We have a question coming in, and I think that this sort of touches on this area a little bit. And again, I want to take this time to thank those that take the time to send in questions. Sometimes we get them in ahead of time. Sometimes it's during the show. But this one reads, I remember vividly my tween years. They were challenging yet such fun as we could still be goofy like kids without much judgment. What I find disconcerting about the current generation of tweens, and in parentheses, it says my granddaughter included, is serious pressure to dress and act like an adult, as well as take in the doom and gloom being forced upon them. Do you have methods to help free them from thinking they need to grow up too quickly so they can just enjoy being kids? And this is from Maddie in California.
Yeah, great question. And I think it's spot on to what we're talking about. It's, you know, and again, I'll say, not to bash the screens, but you can go on the screens and you can see what it's like to be 21 and really look to that as your barometer of what should be now. So I think that's a huge part of how we are pushing kids to grow up earlier. You know, I think some of that's always been there, but the screens definitely impact that. And what I'd say is, how do we as families pull back and have time off the screens to go outside and bike ride as a family, or rake leaves as a family, or do that DIY project as a family? This is a great opportunity, these tween years, for dads to show their daughters and sons, but daughters too. There's no glass ceiling. A girl can use a hammer. A girl can ride her dirt bike in the woods, right? We can teach kids hunting. Like, whatever it is in your culture and in your experiences that you invite your kids in to be kids and do the things that we do young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are the ones, right, that kind of push that agenda, or don't, and then they go to their own devices.
Exactly. Yeah. And if we don't do that, unfortunately, there are plenty of other people out there that want to influence them into doing whatever they want. So I couldn't agree more. I like the fact that you brought up the thing about, you know, dads and daughters, and as far as learning a little bit about how to do everything. And one of the things that, and my girlfriend has complimented me on, is the fact that I know how to do pretty much everything. And I said part of that came from the fact that my dad set up things in such a way with my brother and with my stepsisters, was there was no such thing as this is boys' work or this is girls' work. This isn't men's work or woman's work. So it was, we all did the dishes. We all raked the leaves. And you took turns on who washed or who dried or who raked and who bagged. But it was still a matter of, it wasn't this, we weren't being separated by, okay, well, you do this and you only do that. So, and I think that's a great thing for parents to be reminded, I think. So I'm really glad that you brought that up.
Thank you. So important.
Mm-hmm. So, now, let's talk a little bit about some of the additional mental health stressors, especially that tweens have to cope with as it now relates to these COVID lockdowns, because as if it wasn't difficult enough, now, after not having a social life and then trying to get together and go to parties and go to gatherings, it was hard enough to begin with. I can't imagine what it's like now if you missed 2 years and you've been stuck in your home with your parents, and then all of a sudden, okay, time to figure out how to socialize with my own age again. What have you seen in that area, and what can parents do to help get them through that?
Yes, fascinating. So I have a 13-year-old eighth grader at home. And so basically he left school fifth grade, right, when COVID hit in that March, and then had first 2 years of middle school, six and seven, wow, in COVID. And what's fascinating is typically those years are meant for spontaneous interaction, trial and error, right, peer relationships, getting like sweet new feelings for other peers, right, outside of just friendship, but starting to feel a little something else, right, with that deeper, more complex feeling. And so there was a lot of that that was missed. And so now that, you know, this feels like the first year back from COVID, post-COVID, and what I'm finding is a lot of us are, some of us are trying to make up for lost time. So we're moving super fast. The world is kind of saying, okay, COVID's over, get back to work, get back to the office, get back to school, get to college. And so, you know, we're pushing this like fast-paced agenda. And so what I would say to parents and educators is one of the benefits of COVID was slow down, right? There was a pace of life that is actually better for our mental health than the pace that's super fast. And so for parents and educators to just slow down and let there be downtime, let there be boredom, let there be play is going to be really important for our kids. Also, I'll say to check in with them about their mental health. How are you doing? How is this going for you? What's working? What feels hard?
Yeah. We're talking with Amanda Craig, and we're talking about her book, Who Are You? And What Have You Done With My Kid? So connect with your tween while they're still listening to you. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We're talking with Dr. Amanda Craig, and the subject is tweens. Now, Amanda, when we went to break, you were talking a little bit about communication, and I think it's the most important thing. And one of the things, and I spoke in Washington, D.C. one time in regards to talking to a bunch of educational consultants. And one of the things that I brought up, they said, well, what's the one thing? I said, the one thing is communication. You know, and they were asking a variety of things. And I said, well, you know, absentee fathers, I said, you know, an absentee father, either physically or mentally, you know, is going to take away from what these kids are going through, and especially in these tween years. So let's talk a little bit about how valuable undivided attention is in the midst of all the different daily distractions, and especially for tweens.
Absolutely. And so you just covered kind of the first two pillars, and what I would argue are the most important. And the first one in my book is I see you. And that is purely making time. It is so important. Eye contact, put down the phone, hang, go in their room rather than yelling from the other room, really making space for them. It lets them know they matter and they're important and what they say is important. And then the second pillar is, I am here for you. I'm sorry. The second pillar is, I want to know you. And that's that conversation, that's communication. And it's not just as we're rushing, telling our kid the answer or fixing their problem, but it's making space for them to talk out their problem or talk out their day. Even the silly stories that are just sound like nonsense to us that they just get such a kick out of. Sometimes it's helping them understand their emotions better and helping them put words to that feeling they're having. But all of that, when I go back to the brain from earlier, when we let our kids think through a story or think through a problem, hear themselves talk about it out loud, brainstorm their different ideas, share with us what the other kids would do in that situation, we are strengthening their brain muscles to be problem solvers, to be confident in their storytelling.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And as I was smiling, some of the thoughts that came to mind, one was when you said, know them, get to know them.
Yes.
And my first thought was, so your job isn't to mold them.
Yes.
To get to know them. And I love the way that you put that. And I'll share something for the parents out there that maybe are in that teen or tween time to where they go, when does this stop? When does this change? How does this get better? And I want to tell you, I have the greatest feeling. One of my sons he's in finance, but he also writes scripts. And he called me over the weekend just to say, Dad, I'm stuck on a particular scene and I'd like to have your help in molding this scene. And so I put a lot of thought into it. We ended up having to sort of break and then get back on the phone at a later time. And I gave him my idea and he thought it through and said, you know, Dad, that doesn't work. It doesn't work. But you did give me an idea into how this other part of it now works. So you've helped me fix this one part, but we still need to work on that. And here's why your idea doesn't work. And he had a great explanation for it. And I mean, to all the parents out there, okay, that just warmed my heart so much. Number one, that he wanted to ask, he wanted my opinion, and yet he was man enough to say, I appreciate it, but that's not really where I'm going to go with it. It just doesn't get much better than that.
Oh, you're so right. And you set that up. That wasn't a one-day parenting choice. That was years in the making to get that call.
Well, thank you. And yes, and that's why I'm telling the parents that, you know, it may not have been that way when he was a tween or even a teen, but so know that your effort to continue to be there for them and to continue to know them and not mold them, it does come around later on. It does come back to you.
Absolutely. I'm going to use that, Alan. I wrote that down.
Absolutely. I'll give you credit. There we go. I love it. So along those lines, because I know that people can get discouraged, you know, that, you know, again, I brought up earlier the eye rolls, and I know you talk about it in the book, but so share with the audience the importance of not getting discouraged or getting defensive when the teen rejects your attempt to do things together.
Absolutely. And that's a great word, offended, right? Offensive. Mm-hmm. Because of all the changes going on in their brain, they do toggle between offensive and like childlike and even like tantrums to things more adult-like and more sophisticated thoughts. So, you know, there is that we have to be patient with and know that that's normal development, number one. And number two, I always say to parents, like, you're planting seeds, you know, and some days it's going to work better depending on their mood and where they are and if they're hungry or tired. But a lot of what we do is planting seeds, and you won't see the flower bloom until much later. And then the third thing that's really important for parents to understand is when you really offer time and when you ask them about their emotions, or you give them a feeling word, or you invite them for movie night, know that each of those things are you offering, and they will receive that even if they don't take it. And because you're doing that, you only need to get it right 30% of the time. That's what our research tells us.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So there's a lot of times you can have a miss where they get mad and they storm out. You tried to fix it and they hated your answer. You yelled at them because you're at the end of your patience. As long as you repair those and you're offering all these other pillars of connection, you will actually continue this longer term connection.
Well, that brings me to the other thought, which is self-care. So as parents, knowing that this can be frustrating, and again, I know you touch on it in the book, but share some of the things that we as parents can do that's a level of self-care so that we don't let the frustrations get to us to the point that we are reacting in a way that isn't really appropriate for our children.
I'm so glad you bring this up. This is always the area that gets less attention. It's always, what do we do for our kids? How do we do it? And then that's it. And this piece around self-care is so important. And I talk about it in the book quite a bit, because, and the airlines had it, right? Decades ago. It's like, put your mask on first, and then you can help your child. And if we don't put our mask on in life and have our own joys, have our own things that we do for fun, have relationships outside our kids, challenge ourselves and do hard things to accomplish new goals we have, we will be depleted and we won't be able to show up as much for child rearing or partnership.
Again, that's a great point also, that when you brought up the part in regards to partnership, I think in so many times in which you have, you know, a marriage where, you know, it's just the two of you. And so essentially somebody has all of, outside of work, they have pretty much all of your attention.
Right.
And then the child comes around and the child now is much more needy. So we tend to not give them 50%, but we maybe give them 80% of our time because we think that that's what they need. And your partner, that's another adult. So you figure, well, they can handle it. But I think that as this happens, and then what happens then when you have another child? What are you now giving them only a portion of that 20% that was only left to begin with? So let's talk about that part as well, about if you make sure that you're taking care of your partner, thinking about it, and I think you mentioned in there, you're not only taking care of your partner, taking care of yourself, but it's also what you're modeling for your children as well.
I love that. I mean, not only are we better parents when we're connected with our partner, or even divorced parents co-parenting well, but we feel better inside. We have a better relationship. And then what we're modeling for our kids is a healthy relationship. So when they start to get those sparks and those little giddy feelings, they're going to gravitate towards things that are familiar, which are going to be friendship they see in their parents, or laugh and play and fun that they see in their parents. And so we really want to nurture and take time for our marriage as well. And when we say to the best thing we could say to our kids is, not tonight, I have a date. Daddy and I have a date.
Yes, because now we're showing them how important that is.
That's
great. I love it. Now, you just mentioned in regards to co-parenting, and unfortunately, we live in a society to where it's, you know, almost everybody, there is some level of divorce that's involved. You know, if you have 50% of the marriages getting divorced, but now you have that, you're taking that further out with you know, do you now come from a divorced family and so on. Talk a little bit about how important it is about being on the same page to raise these kids to be as happy and healthy as they can be.
So when we have kids, we are taking a pledge, whether we know it or not, to put ourselves to the side in some of our decision making and really do what's best for our kids. Uh-huh. And self-care is best for our kids, right? But the other thing that you're tapping into is if I choose to get divorced, it is still in my kids' best interest to recognize we are a blended family.
Yep.
And the more we can work together, the more we can collaborate, the more we can show a united front, the more we can be a supporter of their other parent or the other half of their DNA, right? Because when we mm-hmm. put down the other parent, we're putting down half of their DNA.
Good point.
The more we will build a secure environment, a secure family system for them to grow up in.
Yes. Again, and I know you touch on it, but one of your speaking engagements that I pulled up, you know, that you had touched on that. And I think it's so important, and that parents understand that, you know, that negativity or that putting down, and I love the way you put it, is that's half their DNA. And I hadn't thought about that. I just thought that, you know, you want your child to not only be loved by as many of those around them, but to also love them and to put, you know, bad thoughts in their mind or to continually bash the other one is hurting them so much more than what I think the parent that's doing that realizes.
Oh, 100%. And what you're doing in their nervous system is making them feel uneasy, right? They're actually unsure, insecure starts to come up. Am I safe? Can I trust this parent? And when they start to question whether they can trust their parent, they feel alone in the world. And that does show up then long term in their behavior and how they engage in romantic relationships later.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. Okay, we've got another question, more of a comment with a question that's involved. So this one comes in and it says, our tween was showing signs of confusion about his identity, which we felt was somewhat normal. Then he began telling us that he didn't like himself and that he was probably a bad person. When we asked questions about this, we learned that the school was teaching a CRT curriculum. We're in opposition of this material and now find ourselves with no option but to take our son out of this school and arrange for homeschooling. What are your thoughts on this topic? And this is from Pam in Maine.
So interesting. The schools are taking a more active role in health education, sex education, and now we're getting into sexual orientation or gender identity. Some of that is hitting the curriculums in the school. And then we're also seeing more media, mm-hmm. right? More social media addressing these topics. You know, one of the things she's saying that is right on is be curious, ask questions. Mm-hmm. It's not unusual for a tween to start wondering, you know, I have a best friend. Do I like her? Like, is she a romantic interest? I don't know. What's the difference between a best friend and a romantic interest, do you think? Right? Getting them to ponder some of that stuff. The other thing with curriculums, often when a school's in motion, unless there's a big pushback, they will continue to move forward. So I'd get really curious with kids around what messages they're taking from that. You know, what are these, where is the child getting the message around their self-worth? Some of those statements around, I don't like myself, those are self-worth questions.
Yeah, exactly. And very concerning. So I think with the CRT, that's, I think they're referring to the critical race theory curriculum, which unfortunately appears to to suggest that it appears to be telling them that although you don't know it, you have biases that make you a bad person. And, I think that that is not the school's job. And I believe that's what Pam is relating also, is that, and it's unfortunate that it would get to a point to where you feel like you have to homeschool your child if the school system itself, if the public system itself is not listening to the parents and what the parents believe is best for their kids.
Right. If the taxpayers, I'll say this though, and I do feel strongly about this. When a school system or a kid next door are offering our children something we do or don't believe in, it opens up a conversation.
Sure.
Now, before I even get to the conversation, I want to make sure I'm really educated on what is a critical race theory? What is this whole movement? What do I believe in? What don't I believe in? So again, first I have to step back and kind of know what part of this makes sense to me and what my value system is around it.
Mm-hmm.
But even if it's something I don't believe in, it offers a great opportunity for me to talk with my kids around, wow, what are you picking up? What do you understand about that? Here's kind of what I think. You know, do you believe this or that? What that's talking about, critical race theory, are these three bullet points. You know, do you believe in any of those? Actually, and this is important, I don't think it means that. I hear you heard that statement at school, or that's what you took away. From my understanding of CRT, here's what I believe it to be. Would you agree or disagree with that concept? So there are so many times our kids are going to come home with misinformation or things we don't believe in. And instead of us telling our kids, wrong, bad, ick, no, I can't believe it, how dare they? And we may feel all those things. Those are for our partner.
Right.
For our kid, it gives us the opportunity to open up a really important discussion, because this is something they're going to be talking about for years to come. And we just had a conversation on one of my mom's group where the moms were all posting questions on college applications around DEI.
Mm-hmm.
And all colleges, just about all the colleges on this listserv, right, was coming in with, you know, how have you been exposed to inclusivity? What projects have you been involved with that have diversity components? So whether you believe in the critical race theory or not, more importantly is be educated, educate our kids so that as they move through, they know how to move in circles different from theirs.
Yeah, and I like that. And I also like the fact that the questions that you were using are ones that don't have a yes or a no answer. And I think, I don't know if everybody else was picking up on that, but I wanted to draw a highlight on that. So if you're asking your child, what do you think about this? Then that gets an answer that's not yes or no, as opposed to, do you agree with that? They can say yes or no. But if you ask, what do you think about it? So, and that was something that that I also did, and it would, you know, instead of saying, did you have a good day? And it was, what was the most interesting thing that happened today? Or the next day it might be, you know, what was the most exciting thing? What was the strangest thing you saw today? But something to get them to think outside of yes, no, or I don't want to talk about it.
One of the questions we don't ask enough is, what was fun in your day?
Yes.
And then the other question I love with tweens are this or that. So did your teacher say this, or was she more saying that? Or when you walked up to that group and they stopped talking, did you feel embarrassed or left out?
Good point.
It helps them start to cultivate language and stories around their experiences.
All right. Everybody, this is Dr. Amanda Craig. The book is Who Are You and What Have You Done With My Kid? So connect with your tween while they're still listening. Now, Can I assume that the book can be purchased anywhere books are sold, or is it best to go to your website? What's the best way if somebody wants to get in touch with you, or the best way for them to get the book?
So the book is at local libraries. It's also in local bookstores and then also Amazon. Amazon has the hard copy and also an audio version. And you can find my Instagram at Amanda Craig, PhD.
There we go. I love it. Amanda, thank you so much for not only coming on the show, but for putting this information out there. You know, this show is called Answers Network, and we focus on bringing people on that we think are making a positive difference in the world. And I'm so glad that you're one of them and that you could join us.
Thank you. It was lovely being here. I love what you're doing.
All right. Thank you. And for everybody out there, be with us next week because we're going to be joined by Deborah Corey, and she's going to discuss her new book, See It, Say It, Appreciate It. And also, please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or better yet, just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many more. And the next time that you're on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. Now, for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.